Hello.
Hi, Mr. Duke.
Yes.
This is Jerry Mitchell from the Clarion Ledger, Jackson, Mississippi.
Hi, Mr. Mitchell. How are you?
Doing fine. Thanks for talking.
No problem.
Was going to get your thoughts on the election. I know I read what you wrote about it. Just
mm-hmm.
kind of
mm-hmm.
how you perceive this election in terms of the way that European Americans are going to react to this.
Well, I don't know. I think that I think Obama has obviously a good chance to be elected. It's certainly not a certainty by any means, but that's simply because America is in such bad shape right now, and the Iraq War is an absolute insanity. And at least he had some a record of being against this insanity of the Iraq War. I think that's a factor. I think the economy's in shambles.
And I think
McCain is not really offering any real alternative to Obama. I mean, here's a man who was pro amnesty. He has been for
in terms of pro amnesty, in terms of immigration,
illegal aliens, yeah.
Yeah.
And so pro-immigration, he's been pro-affirmative action. He flip-flopped on the Martin Luther King birthday issue. I mean, there's so many different areas. I mean, the guy is, we consider McCain an absolute sellout.
Right.
To the interest of the European American people. So it's going to be an interesting election. I tell you this, that just the fact that, first of all, we should mention for a moment just what is in fact some of the aspects of the Obama candidacy. I mean, this is not some conservative black guy. This is a guy that sponsored a bill in the Illinois legislature to ban all handguns. This is a guy who has been a member of a black racist church for 20 years, and his mentor has been Jeremiah.
Right. Yeah.
His mentor has, you know, and the church itself is a black racist church. The church itself, on the website, a few months ago, as his campaign was heating up, I went to the website, and everything is black this, black that, and in fact, the website says, quote, that they are true to Africa. You know, that's not America,
right,
but to Africa. And so, I mean, it's also Reverend Cohen says his church, and of course, Obama has to know this. His church is based on the black, a book called The Black Liberation Theology by Reverend Cohen. And Obama's gone on television, said this is what our church is, and if you want to know about the church, you just have to read the Black Liberation Theology of Reverend Cohen. In that book, Reverend Cohen writes, and I quote, "If God is not for us and against white people, then he's a murderer, and we had better kill him. The task of black theology is to kill gods who do not belong to the black community."
That's Reverend Cohen. How's his last name spelled, by the way?
C-O-N-E, I believe.
C-O-N-E?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I mean, and you can check that. You can do a Google
search.
Yeah,
I'll go to
the Washington Times. They have an article on it. And my website's got some articles. Just go on down.
Okay.
I've got some quotes. I mean, there's so many different aspects of this fellow's of history. I mean, he refused to wear an American flag lapel pin. I guess
right.
At some point. He also refused to salute the flag until, of course, it became politically,
Right.
dangerous, I guess, for him. He is very close friends. In fact, two of the people that really helped his fundraising in his race for Illinois, who's still friends with him, are two communist terrorist bombers. I mean, Lou Ayers and Bernadine Dorn,
mm-hmm.
who were in, of course, the Weather Underground and who literally are proud
right.
of their bombing. He's also been very recently, this is going to go in my next article, he just recently was endorsed by the Communist Party USA, they love him. In fact, their front page of their paper says "Change Wins," and how wonderful, you know, they love Obama. He's not rejected or repudiated that.
Right.
Michelle Obama, I read her thesis that she had at Princeton, and she says specifically that her loyalty is to the black community, that her primary loyalty is the black community, not everybody, but to the black community. So the guy is, absolute, he's got a long record of black racism, and it's like, I'm sure he's got to say certain things. He needs white votes to win, but that's just his long, long, long record, and the record of his wife. And
who do you see?
I also see him as an affirmative action president. I mean, he couldn't even have won a Democratic nomination except for the fact he's black. It has nothing to do with his quote qualifications. If he were not black, he couldn't even have got the black vote from Hillary Clinton.
right.
More or less a lot of the white vote. So what Obama has done is he has racially, his candidacy and the fact that so many media pushed the candidacy has racially charged American politics. And European Americans are now very clear, are getting very clear about the fact that unless we defend our heritage, our interests as a group, we're going to lose everything that's important to us in our society. We're going to lose our rights, our freedoms, our economic well-being, everything else, because it's just amazing. I mean, every in fact, it's very common for reporters to ask Obama or McCain, what will you do for the black community? What will you do for the Hispanic community? Nobody ever dares ask, well, why should white people vote for you?
Right.
And even Clinton, when she got desperate at the end, for the first time, started actually making direct appeals to white working people,
Right.
By race, which is pretty amazing. And so I think the whole process, and this is another person, by the way, has a worse record than McCain. His whole life has been about promoting affirmative action programs and promoting the black agenda. And she was making an appeal. So I think Obama is really going to raise the ante and is going to help create more of a clear consciousness among white Americans. And it's already doing that. I mean, our website numbers are way up.
How much?
Almost double in the last year since Obama began his candidacy. We've been always growing, but we've really accelerated. And the same thing is true of Stormfront, another website that.
Right, I've heard they've grown as well.
Yeah,
he's been quoted as saying that.
Yeah, and that's correct. And so it's.
Do you think his election, in a sense, is this something that, in a sense, from a grander political scheme of things, would actually help to fuel your movement or whatever you call it?
I would never vote for him, nor McCain.
But I'm just saying you would.
But I think that if he gets to be president, I think that it will absolutely change politics in America forever, in the sense that European Americans, will realize that, we've really lost the foundation of our country. That we've really, I guess a lot of white people can feel some sort of solace when they look at mostly white faces in Congress. Even if these white faces are pushing forced integration, even if they're pushing open borders, even if they're pushing so many negative programs, affirmative action, discrimination against whites on a massive scale, which is even hardly talked about in this country anymore, yet it exists. Even though this is going on, they say, well, maybe these people are going to do something. Maybe they'll get a hold of themselves and all is not lost. Obama as president is like a visual aid to people to European Americans, and it's going to have a huge impact. And the most important factor, it's going to have a huge impact on those who really agree fundamentally with people like myself, but who don't do much and who are not motivated, or who this will motivate them. You know, I got 65%, as you know, of the white vote in Louisiana in two major elections. And that was even being outspent 100-1, and with all the establishment working against me and economic blackmail against my state. Economic, so where people were told they were going to lose their jobs if they voted for me, but they still voted for me 65%. That tells me that, you know, I still believe that three-quarters of the white people in America fundamentally think the way I think. They, and every poll shows most people are opposed to affirmative action. Most whites, are a vast majority, are opposed to affirmative action. A vast majority are opposed to open borders. A vast majority, you know, are concerned about, you know, foreign aid, foreign policies of this country that are not helping us. I think the conservatives have been told that they've got to support the Iraq war because it's a conservative thing to do, but I think...
Well, it sounds in a way, I mean, if somebody, if you're just talking about, if we, if all we were talking about is foreign policy, you might agree with Obama on some of those issues.
Well, Obama's proven to be, he's exactly like McCain. I mean, he has completely been over for the AIPAC and Israel.
Oh, you're talking about, right, I see what you're talking about.
I mean, Obama's...
I was thinking of the war.
Well, he's already backtracking on the war, and he's saying that maybe the 16 months isn't a hard thing, and now he's talking about increasing troops in Afghanistan. I don't want to see that.
Right.
Afghanistan,
that's
we have no possibility. We have. He wants to increase a war. He wants to increase the war in Afghanistan. What good does it do to bring some troops out of Iraq and then bring them to Afghanistan?
Right.
Afghanistan is not a war that's winnable, period. It can never be won. The British couldn't do it in 100 years. We can't do it. The Russians couldn't do it. We can't do it. It's the nature
of
the, it's the nature of the place. Are we going to be committed to having American boys die over there for the next 50 years or 100 years and still not succeed?
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, I have no objection if any terrorists tries to attack this country. I have no objection for us going in if we can find out where they are and dealing with them if we have any way we have to. But
right,
I do object to us fighting a war in Afghanistan and a war in Iraq that was never really in the interest of the American people. In effect, the Iraq war, as you probably know, as I write my website, was specifically a war for Israel. Read the one I have. The article recently by James Petras about the oil issue. The oil companies didn't lobby for this war, but Israel sure in the hell did. And the neocon movement is really a Jewish movement. It's got some Gentiles involved, sure, but it's overwhelmingly Jewish. And everybody knows that. Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz and Libby, and we can just go on and on. I mean, it's nothing. The whole...
Right.
Gensa think tank and all the rest of it. And we fought this war for Israel. And we are dying right now over there for Israel. And we're bankrupting this country for Israel. So so Obama is no answer there either.
Right. I understand. Now, in some circles, I'm not saying you suggested this, but in some circles, if you read some of the websites, there has been some discussion of a bomb, you know, violence is going to come because if Obama does become president, violence will befall him at some point, or he'll be assassinated or whatever.
Well, I think people worry about that. I mean, I think if something happened to Obama now or as president, I think it'd be the worst possible and most terrible thing that would that could befall our country. Not only from the standpoint that no elected person, no individual should ever suffer that kind of fate. But also from the standpoint that I think that if such happened, it would completely destroy the last vestiges of civil liberties we have in this country.
Okay.
I think that absolutely. I mean, we've had a tremendous attack on the civil liberties of this nation, as you know, over the last few years, especially since the 9/11 attack. And I think if this happened, I think we would lose the last vestiges of civil liberties
in
America.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's no question in my mind.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that would be the most tragic thing that could possibly happen.
Yeah.
I would worry about, you know, some of the Israelis who seem to dominate the American government. I would worry about the Israeli Mossad taking them out. and then using that as an excuse to shut down any criticism of Israel in this country, to take away our remnants of our First Amendment. In many places in Europe, I teach in Europe, as you know now. I'm a professor.
Right,
I've finished my PhD just a few years ago.
Where are you now, by the way, in terms of what country are you in now?
Actually, I'm currently in northern Italy.
Okay.
And I've actually lectured about 100 universities last year, and I teach courses primarily in the university called MAUP in Ukraine.
Right.
In Kiev. But I lecture, and I'm invited by many universities. Strange as it may seem, I'm one of the most listened to in Europe anyway, American voices in opposition to the Iraq War.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and
okay.
I have been since before the war began. I said long before the war began, there were no weapons of mass destruction, and I had lots of good reasons for it.
Well, you're right.
Well, it was, you know, for me, I think it was so obvious. You know, I studied the situation, and yet we had hundreds of inspectors on the ground, and we were offering $25 million reward for any Iraqi who could show us where any of these so-called tens of thousands of tons of weapons were buried.
Right, right.
And nobody could come forward.
Nobody could come up with it.
It was a lie. That was manufactured. The whole thing was manufactured because they try to make Iraq out to be a threat to America because the American people were not prepared then to go fight a war for Israel in Iraq with the dangers that posed for the American people. So they had to say that America was being threatened, and it was all a lie, the yellow cake uranium, the mobile gas, you know, creation stations and all. It was all a huge lie. And I can show you again from every standpoint of the Israeli involvement in that war. Again, it wasn't big oil. It wasn't even a war for oil. We're not getting one more drop of oil from this war that we got before, and the European and community and the world would not accept us just stealing the oil.
Right.
And that's the fact. We could have bought the oil just as well from Saddam Hussein. And by the way, Saddam Hussein had many agreements with American companies. And Saddam Hussein was, in fact, a ally of the United States. He fought a war against Iran as basically a proxy of the United States. And he became an enemy for only one reason, and one reason only, and that was because he supported the Palestinian resistance to occupation on the West Bank and Gaza, and he was an enemy of Israel. That's why he became an enemy of America. And that's why we've suffered tens of thousands of Americans now who are maimed, crippled, blinded.
Right.
Trillions of dollars it's going to cost the American economy.
Oh, absolutely.
And that we have an escalating war on terror and more terrorism today than ever before.
Do you back to kind of my original question, do you foresee if Obama is elected, this will help to unify or expand the movement, European American movement, or whatever you want to call it?
Well, I think there's some of that going on right now. I mean,
you already mentioned your website, Stormfront. So you think some of it's already taking place? Do you see that accelerating?
Fields of Truth at Last is joining with.
Is he still alive?
He sure is, and he's.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And he's still publishing, and he's joining with my organization and. And with my publication. In fact, this month, The Truth at Last is merging with the David Duke Report.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's happening this month. So it's already happening. But I'm not, you know, it's not so much what's going on with the movement. I mean, I know many people, and I've consulted many campaigns in Europe, especially in Eastern Europe. And you know, there's a movement of greater and greater awareness of European heritage. And people... You know, it's not a white supremacist movement. You know, I would reject and criticize that term. I don't believe in any sort of racial supremacism or anybody controlling others. But I do believe that every people on the planet have a right to run their own affairs and the right to exist and continue on with their heritage and their values. And every nation has that right. Just the same way that we talk about saving Tibet and what a loss that would be if this ancient culture were destroyed, I think the same truth is there also for, you know, for right. European mankind. I think that we have a right, right to live. And we have direct, we have governmental policies today in the United States and in Europe and in Canada that specifically are creating, are making Europeans a minority in our own homelands, minority right, in our own lands. And right, and all that will mean in terms of everything from economy to crime to social costs to social destruction. We're going to see that, and we're seeing that in Europe. We're seeing. I was in France just a few days ago and meeting uh-huh, with a number of patriots there, and I saw parts of France that looked like Africa. I mean, and they had the same kinds of characters that you have in the slums in the United States. You know, unbelievable, burned out cars and terrible trash in the street, and the crime rates that reflect just an unbelievable change. There's a huge change, a demographic tidal wave that's sweeping over the West. And if we don't wake up to what's going on, we're simply going to cease our existence as a people. And I think that would be a great tragedy in the world. And I think every people has a right to live, including our own people. And, you know, of course, what I'm saying to you now and what I write my website is very different than how I'm portrayed in the media. You know, whites.
Well, I'm familiar with your history. I've heard you many moons ago. So.
And many moons ago, I was saying pretty much the same thing. I wasn't speaking in radical, terrible terms or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I was talking about, you know, white heritage, white rights, and the fact that we've got a right to preserve our way of life, just like anybody else does.
Do you foresee, I know some have spoken about this, do you foresee the Balkanization, like if, say, Obama's elected, some have suggested that this could help to fuel, for lack of a better term, kind of the Balkanization of America?
Well, we got a guy who's 20 years in a black, basically black separatist racist church, saying, God damn America, and, you know, and whites are the enemy. And hearing that from the pulpit, whites are the enemy, and he's liable to be president. And white people are certainly getting knowledgeable about this, which is one reason why he might not make it this time, you know. But white people becoming knowledgeable, this, how can it help but make white people? See, I think the country is already Balkanized as far as the non-white groups are concerned. Mexicans
right,
have La Raza, which means the race. And La Raza Unida, which means the united race, you know, and the blacks have the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or, you know, they
right,
have black they have Black Nurses Association, Black Firemen's Associations, Black Police Associations, et cetera, et cetera,
right,
et cetera. We have, of course, even though the Jews are one of the smallest population groups in the country, we have thousands of organizations specifically oriented to Jewish preservation, Jewish heritage, not just Jewish religion, but the preservation of the Jewish people,
uh-huh,
per se. So I think the country is already Balkanized. I just think for the first time what Obama's going to be doing, what Obama will do is cause white people to focus that all these groups are out there. We're becoming a minority in our own country. Unless we stand up and defend the things that we love and we care about, and our very existence, we are going to lose our society. That this society is going to be remade into something far different than what the average white American wants. Whether you talk about gun control, look at the positions of La Raza and NAACP as compared to white Americans. If you talk about taxes, if you talk about welfare, if you talk about
right,
who, you know, letting the black criminals out of prisons, you know, if you
mm-hmm,
talk about immigration, just you can talk about all these issues, that when this demographic change takes place, we're going to lose. And unless we begin to do something courageous and intelligent, unless we begin to organize politically and socially,
right,
that one person put it to me this way. I'm not saying this because I don't have any plans to run. I'm sure not running this time, but you know, that you know, Obama's president paves the way for David Duke as president. And I do believe that Obama, because of his record and because of his policies, I think he's going to polarize the country, and I think that he's going to make white people aware that our group needs advocacy.
Okay.
At the same time, I think I see the same thing in terms of a lot of the other critical issues going on, like the subservience of this country to Israel and the billions of dollars going there, and this insane policy we have in the Middle East, and a very unjust policy against the Palestinians and others, and this worldwide globalism that is being presented. I think that Obama is right in step with the George mm-hmm. Bushes mm-hmm. and the McCains. Obama's even used rhetoric like he'll do anything to prevent Iran from having a bomb. Even he's not taking any option off the table, which presumably has been interpreted as even, you know, threatening to nuke the country.
Right.
And of course, I'm very familiar with that. As you know, I mean, I think you know something about me. I spoke at the conference in Tehran, and I've met Ahmadinejad and conferred with him privately. I was present when he gave a speech that was reported all over the world as saying that he was going to wipe, that he was threatened to wipe Israel off the map. And I've heard that repeated, as you know. You read it every day in media. It's repeated tens of thousands of times until it's become like a fact. In the speech, I heard it with my own words. I heard the translator was right there, and I heard the words. And he said specifically that the Zionist regime of Israel would pass away with the sands of time. And he used the example of the fall of the communist regime in Russia.
Right.
He didn't use the word. He didn't even use the word map.
He didn't say he was going to be wiped out.
He didn't say he was even going. He didn't say he was going to destroy the Zionist regime either. He didn't even threaten. He just said he thought the Zionist regime would pass the same way and he used the analogy the same way the communist regime passed away in Russia. Now, was Russia wiped off the map, or the Russian people wiped off the map? I mean, and this is repeated 1,000 times. You're a journalist. I mean, how do you explain the fact that these lies can be repeated? The only way that I know that they can be repeated is the tremendous power, and the people that really are the enemies of Iran again are the Israelis who don't. These people, these Israelis have so these Zionist radicals have so much power in American media and government that we can't even get the truth out. And I'll give you another example.
Okay.
As you probably are aware of this, have you ever heard of the Levon affair?
No, I don't think I have.
In the 1950s, the Israeli Mossad attacked American installations in Egypt with bombs, terrorist bombs. They blew up American theaters, American libraries, and the attempt was to blame the Egyptians so we'd go to war unjustly against Egypt. Now, this was exposed, and the Israeli defense minister, Pinhas Levon, was forced to resign, not because he bombed American installations and Israel did that, but because it didn't work. Because what happened was one of the Israeli agents' bombs went off in their pockets and exploded prematurely, and he spilled the beans, and the whole Israeli gang was rounded up, you know, who was responsible for this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all fact. You could look it up. Just do a little research, okay? You don't even know about, and it's not your fault. You're a journalist. I'm sure you're a pretty well-read man. You didn't even know what the Levon affair was.
No.
Because it's not in our consciousness. So if people don't even know that Israel committed terrorist acts against us, I know you've heard of the USS Liberty attack. That's been a little more talked about. But that's been totally swept under the rug. We had 11 months of hearings in the United States Congress on the sister ship of the Liberty, the Pueblo, when the Chinese captured it, or the North Korean, excuse me. And we had no formal congressional investigation of the Liberty. And the Secretary of State of the United States at the time and since was Dean Rusk. And the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States of America was Admiral Thomas Moore. Two men who are in the best position to know whether this was an accident or whether it was intentional, okay, an intentional, deliberate attack. both of these men say there's no question at all. The evidence is overwhelming. It was a deliberate attack. They meant to attack this ship, sink it, and to use this as an excuse, you know, for America to get into the war and kill. They wanted to kill everybody on board. I mean, it's a whole. It's an unbelievable story, but it's there and it's factual. And again, it's not just David Duke saying this. It's Dean Rusk.
Right.
It's the man who was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time. It's the guy who was our Secretary of State who said it, and who said the same thing his entire life, that it was no question, there's huge evidence to show that it wasn't an accident. They buzzed the ship for hours and hours. You can read the accounts of the men on board the Liberty. So Israel attacks U.S. ship. They kill 34 Americans. They wound 174 Americans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
After this attack, does anything stop? No, it's during the war. In fact, aid for them continues. We send them more weapons. We don't go bombing them like we say that anybody commits terrorism against us will be bombed or be embargoed.
Right.
We don't do that. We send them more weapons. And, of course,
right.
After the Levant affair, they used some of those weapons to attack us again in the USS Liberty. You know about the Jonathan Pollard case, I'm sure. Devastated our entire intelligence network in Europe. I mean,
I understand.
Anger at the media, but it's not just I know that people like you can't say much about it. If you started talking about Israel's terrorist attacks against America, you know, you wouldn't have your job long.
Well, to get back kind of original point, you said you're not going to vote for Obama. Are you going to vote for McCain?
No way. I wouldn't. Look, I'd rather put my finger into
the
fire than to vote for Obama or McCain. I'm not going to vote for someone who I consider to be a traitor to our American heritage and people. No way. I think my choice would be if I were going to vote, and we'll have to wait and see on that, but if I vote, it would be probably for someone, some third party, who I think
would
make the most impact, and probably, and again, the system is organized, so third parties don't have a fair shake, because you probably know that too.
Sure.
By the people who control this country, and then they talk about Russia's lack of freedom. You know, I taught in Russia for 5 years.
Right. Bob Barr, or have you really got?
I tell you, at this point, I'd vote for the third party, which I think they could get the most votes as a protest, and I'd probably end up voting for Ralph Nader.
Oh, okay.
Simply because I think that the Zionist issue is so important that he's the only one, and I disagree with him on a number of other issues, but he's the only one who's had the courage to talk about our Mideast policy and the Zionist control of Congress and calling our presidents puppets of Israel and the rest of it. And
okay.
I would probably – at this point, I think if I voted, I would probably vote for Ralph Nader.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mr. Duke. I appreciate it.
Well, I think I gave you a few things to chew on.
You did. I appreciate that.
So you've been with the Clarion Ledger now for how many years?
Gosh, a long time. Since 86.
Yeah. When are you going to move up to the New York Times?
That's okay.
Who owns the Ledger now?
Same as when I got here, Gannett.
Yeah, Gannett owns it.
It owns a bunch of papers, about 90 newspapers nationally. So.
Yeah, they do. They have, and that's what we've moved in this country to, a lot of change.
Yeah, that's the way, I mean, it's not anything unusual, this paper. I mean, practically every newspaper in this country, there are very few family newspapers anymore.
Well, that's true. And what they are, some big
anyway,
chains like the Newhouse chain and things.
Right.
Like that.
You have Newhouse. You have Gannett. You have
the Washington
McClatchy.
Point.
McClatchy owns a few.
Washington Point Newsweek is basically a family kind of chain too.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Meyer Graham and that ilk.
Well, the Dallas paper. I don't know if they finally sold out. They were kind of owned by local media group. But anyway.
You know, I like some of the reporting. Thank God for the internet, Nick, because now I can read papers from all over the world easily.
But, it is nice. I like it too.
I used to like the Los Angeles Times. I thought it was one of the better papers, but now the Zionists have bought that out too. You know.
So. Yeah. All right.
So, but anyway, we
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
When are you going to press on this thing?
I think it's going to run in the morning. We'll just have to see. But anyway, it'll be run tomorrow or it'll run the day after that. But it's clearingledger.com if you want to look at it.
I will definitely take a look at it.
All right.
And if you have any more questions as you're doing this thing, just
I will. I'll email you or whatever.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye.